everyone, and welcome back to Raya Affairs. My name is Francia Morales, and I'll be your host for this episode. Raya is a youth-led international think tank that translates the abstract world of international affairs by simplifying rather than generalizing. Raya is a place where you come to learn about the stories and worries of political leaders, the behind the scenes of decision makers, and how politics impacts and changes your life. This is Raya Affairs, filling you in wherever you are. As always, I would like to give a disclaimer that expressed opinions in this episode are welcome, even though they might not be a direct reflection of Raya, as we specialize in unbiased writing. This episode is the third in a series of six as part of the IE Raya Summer Research Program of 2024. Raya has invited 12 IE students.
One second, my phone is falling.
This has to change. Okay, the bananas are in place. This episode is the third in a series of six as part of the IE Raya Summer Research Program of 2024. Raya has invited 12 IE University students to join our think tank and spend 9 weeks researching a figure from around the world to try to answer a simple question. Are they a climate leader? During their research, students have done a deep dive of the person's background, policies, and impact of said policies in an effort to bring light to the diverse ways in which every person, no matter the role that they play in society, can contribute to the global climate change policy framework. Here to talk about Nemonte Nenkimo from Ecuador, we have Matilde Romagnoli and Lucinda Schüler. Would you like to introduce yourselves to our audience?
Sure. Hi, my name is Matilde. I'm Italian and I currently study law and international relations at IE.
Hi, I'm Lucinda. I'm German and Hungarian and I'm currently studying international relations at IE.
It's very nice to have you both here. Thank you for your introduction. And as you may have seen before we dive into your interview, we would like to ask the most important question of all. Could you both tell us which leader, either dead or alive, who has impacted the world, would you like to have a conversation with? Let's start with you, Matilde.
Well, first of all, thank you for having us, Francia. And to answer your question, I will probably say Margaret Thatcher.
Any reason why?
Well, multiple actually. I will mainly say because I would like to ask her a couple of questions about her policies and also how she dealt with the pressure of being the first female leader in the UK.
I would also ask her some questions about her policies. Number one, why? But what about you, Lucinda?
I think I'd probably go a different route and go for dictator and more such as Pol Pot and ask more about the reasons behind their actions and why how they feel about it, I think.
Interesting. I can imagine how that would go, having a young person really probe them and say, like, so why did you do that? They'd be like, I don't know. but those are great answers. I think they're rather interesting. I believe, Matilde, if you go to maybe listen to one of the episodes that are already published. I'm not sure if it would be included, but I also mentioned Margaret Thatcher. And fun fact, my mother called me Thatcher growing up. That is my mother's pet name for me.
Wow, that's a tough nickname to grow with.
It is a lot of pressure. She said she wanted me to be as hard-hitting as her, and I try to be. So it's an honor and a curse. But now we can properly begin after our little icebreaker. Thank you for your answers. And before we head into her policies or her advocacy, I first want to know, who is Nemonte Nenkimo?
So Nemonte Nenkimo was born in 1985 in the Pastaza region of the Ecuadorian Amazon. She grew up living at one with the Amazon. She has lived there her whole life and she is campaigning for the protection of the Amazon. She's a mother, she's a woman member of the Guarani community, which is an indigenous tribe that lives in this region and believes strongly in animism, which is the interconnection of spirits and the nature around them.
Okay, so an indigenous woman who has grown up her whole life in the Amazon. I believe that a conceptualization that people have of indigenous groups is that they're not so quite integrated into the political culture of many countries. So how has Nemonte Nkimo become involved in the fight against climate change, and why?
She has started the Save Alliance, which is an organization that not only campaigns for protection of the Amazon, but also on indigenous rights and renewable energy, and in general against climate change and the effects of it. She has also acted as a leader within her own community, and this led to her motivation to not only fight for indigenous rights, but the protection of her home, which is the Amazon rainforest, from human activity such as deforestation for the oil and mining industries.
Actually, it's particularly interesting how Nemonte Nkimo, since she was a child, demonstrated a particular interest towards nature and the environment. When she was a child, she grew up with her grandfather, who was as well a leader of the tribe, and he initiated her to having a very close relationship with the forest and the rivers. Later on, when she was only 12 years old, she visited her aunt in a neighborhood village, and that's the time where she started seeing drilling activities in her territory. She saw the sky and the rivers being particularly polluted, and that was a crystallizing moment in her childhood, because it's the time when she realizes that her homeland and that her community could have been at stake.
Wow, that's really interesting. That must have really brought the issue, I mean, no pun intended, really close to home. So besides mining and drilling, what are the main climatic challenges that Ecuador faces today? What are the challenges that she is trying to address?
So Ecuador obviously is a beautifully diverse nation, and not only because of the Amazon, but also because there are many other biomes within the nation. It houses 8% of all animal species and 10% of the planet's flora. And on top of this, there are 14 indigenous nationalities in the nation. So Ecuador has so much importance, not only to the biodiversity index, for example, and keeping species alive, but also as a carbon sink. As a carbon sink, the trees that are in the Amazon are holding precious carbon. And when humans cut down the forest for making space for the mining industry or for agriculture, they are releasing this carbon because the trees are usually burnt in a slash and burn method that's very commonly practiced in the Amazon. And as the trees are burnt, they release CO2 into the atmosphere. And as you may know, this is a key part of the process that we're experiencing right now called global warming, as CO2 and other gas emissions, usually from human activity in the recent years, are creating a greenhouse layer in our atmosphere, which is trapping in heat from the sun. And if we don't take steps to stop or limit human activity massively, we are at threat of rising sea levels, increased flooding, droughts, forest fires, and the loss of biodiversity. Coming back to the issues of Ecuador and how it's specifically bad there. And the government has massively been opening up the oil industry for economic purposes. Mining currently only accounts 1% of the nation's GDP, and that is why the government is trying to increase these operations across the nation. And there are specific oil pools underneath the earth in the Amazon, one being right under the Warrawani tribe's native lands. As an upper middle income country, Ecuador is also trying to develop itself further by boosting its economy through industries such as oil and mining, which are having negative side effects on social aspects, human security, such as the tribes, and environmental effects, such as global warming.
How has Nkimo helped Ecuador address these issues? What have been her proposals?
It's quite interesting because Nkimo had the unique ability to address these issues on multiple levels, both an international one and a local one. I will start by a local one because I think it could be seen as one of the most relevant ones. And through her love for the nature and her land, she managed to bring different communities together, both in Ecuador and Peru, creating an alliance of indigenous tribes. By bringing the tribes together, she managed to understand in depth what were the problems that these tribes were facing, both when it comes to the foreign companies coming in the territory to drill and mine, but also when it comes to the consequences that these activities were having in the territory. By creating a map where all the different changes in the forests and in the rivers and in the land, she managed to understand what were the actions that needed to be taken and create a 10-year plan to address these issues. In order to achieve that, she moved herself and the tribes at an international level by creating awareness social media campaign to raise funds to fund these activities, and also on a legal sphere by trying to have authority recognize the danger that the forest was facing, and having the courts help her fight against the government just minding economic interest. Very important is the lawsuit that the Monte Nechimo started in 2019 after intense activities of oil drilling and mining in the Amazon territories. She carried out a lawsuit against the government in Ecuador as one of the main plaintiffs, together with the Human Rights Protection Agency in Ecuador. The lawsuit ended up being particularly successful, as the court recognizes the indigenous right of consultation, meaning that according to different international treaties that Ecuador signed, the government is also always meant to consult indigenous tribes wherever a decision that might directly or also indirectly affect them has to be taken. In addition, the lawsuit allowed Nemonte Nechimo to win her fight and to have more than 500,000 acres of the Amazonian forest being protected. That was an essential turnover in the case, because Ecuador, some year before the lawsuit, was one of the first countries in the world to recognize environmental rights. And that was a breakthrough case, as for the first time the Supreme Court actually enforced those rights. And it is believed that this Ecuadorian case that reached the Supreme Court of Ecuador and named and used as legal arguments different international treaties will also be referenced at an international level in the upcoming years.
She managed to garner support not only from her local communities and the tribes and her nation to support her on this lawsuit against the Ecuadorian government that they successfully won, but also she had a massive following across the world. Through our online campaign, Our Rainforest is Not for Sale, which, alongside a petition that secured 378,000 signatures, this online campaign raised awareness worldwide for the destruction of the Amazon. The online campaign not only educated people on the beauty and importance of Amazon rainforest and secured the win in the lawsuit, but it also gave Nemonte Nechimo an international platform on which to continue her activism. She used hashtags, she used posts, she also got a lot of celebrity recognition from celebrities such as Leonardo DiCaprio, who also, coincidentally, nominated her for Time's 100 Most Influential People of the Year in 2020, growing her online presence.
What are the main obstacles that Nechimo has had to overcome when attempting to address these issues? So with her suing the government, with her international online campaign, and with the alliance that you mentioned with other groups within Peru, what have been the biggest obstacles for her?
Well, actually, probably the biggest obstacle that Nemonte Nechimo had to overcome was the fact that she is not actually in a governmental position. So whatever activism or policy she wanted to implement, she would have to use public pressure and methods such as the petitions to actually make a change, because she cannot implement them herself. And this can be, the difficulties can be seen during the lawsuit, because there was a lot of obstacles such as language barriers, because the Warani people don't, their native language is not Spanish. So not only had to learn Spanish and be able to speak it fluently enough to conduct a lawsuit within it, there were also difficulties because the Warani people live in a very secluded area of the Amazon, and all the lawsuit meetings and all the court hearings were located in cities. So the Warani people could not access them easily, and on top of the language barrier and other issues surrounding there was a blatant disregard for the indigenous people because of, as you mentioned, that people usually see indigenous people as more secluded and they're not usually integrated into society as well. And that was very clear with the Montenegro Kimo's lawsuit.
So you two have already mentioned some pretty prominent successes of her career, including both the lawsuit that you mentioned and the campaign that she carried out. But can you tell us really quickly what have been, well, not. But can you mention overall, has she been successful really in her advocacy for climate change? In her advocacy for climate change policy and conservation in Ecuador?
I think, Francia, this is a bit of a controversial question. Has her plan to restore and preserve the Amazon is a very long-term and ambitious plan. The plan is supposed to achieve the main goals by 2030, and despite we're pretty much running out of time when it comes to environmental issue, we still have some years to go. What is clear so far is that her success in bringing the communities together and raising awareness when it comes to these issues is undeniable. One relevant success is the creation by the Celebo Alliance of a school in Ecuador that aims at educating the local populations to sustainable environmental practices and cultivation practices, and aims at restoring the connection between the indigenous tribes and practices of ecotourism, for example. What Nemontenekimo has been focusing on a lot is the ability of Ecuador to implement economic practices that at the same time can coexist with the restoration of the Amazon. Most of the funds so far has been allocated in reforestation, and that has been quite successful given the constant efforts to rainforest the Amazon and to protect larger section of the latter.
So what can our audience learn from the case of Ecuador's climate policies?
I would say that the main takeaway is not to underestimate the potential and the power of local communities. After all, if the government ended up, after the lawsuit, consulting the population on whether they wanted this big industry to come in the territories and mine and drill, it was because Nemontenekimo managed to bring these communities together and show how, at the end of the day, they all had the same interest, which was to preserve their home and to preserve the forest, which is an essential part of their culture, despite the differences that each tribe might have with one another. So her great power and strength as a leader, I would say, was to show how the different tribes could be united in their differences, and how we always think about how to change things, we need to approach issue at a global level. Well, she shows that that is possible also focusing on the micro level and tackling things locally first.
I think that your answer is a really good segue to understanding and maybe telling our audience, why is a case like Ecuador and a case like Nemontenekimo's role important? Why should we look to them to learn something?
I think it's particularly important to realize that the issues that are going on in Ecuador concerning human activity and deforestation is not just happening in Ecuador. It's happening in all the countries that have a forest or a rainforest, or even in a country such as England, where rapid rates of urbanization are increasing levels of deforestation worldwide, which, as explained before, are contributing to the global warming that we're experiencing now, which only increases forest fires, which thereby increase carbon dioxide released again. And as a global community, we have to realize that even if you're not in a country that in which you can see deforestation firsthand, it is still occurring. And we all have to make a conscious effort together to...
If I may add, I think that the case is also quite relatable to most people, because we all have older people living in our town, in our city, or people that have lived the town and our homeland in a different way as we do. And I think that Nemontene Kimo shows the importance of creating a bond with those past generation, because it's by building a dialogue with them that we understand how things have changed through time, and we're able to reconnect with how things used to be and used to look like. And by doing so, we also become closer to our origins and to our land, meaning that that will allow us to respect the place where we live in a different way, and perhaps realize that how much we depend on the land where we live on a daily basis without even realizing it most of the times.
So to conclude this interview, which has been really interesting, in your own words, is Nemontene Kimo a climate leader?
I would say she definitely is. I think her successes so far within the lawsuit, the campaign, within her organizations as well, from bottom-up approach, have massively shown the power that communities can have on governmental policies. She is a climate activist, and due to her traditional Wairani beliefs, the tribe is even sometimes nicknamed the guardians of the Amazon rainforest. And these beliefs have led to her passion to protect the forest and prevent global warming, which demonstrates that she truly is a climate leader.
I totally agree. I think she definitely is a climate leader, perhaps a bit of an atypical one, and personally that's why I love her. And the reason why I'm saying so is because she always combines climate issue with social ones and with her tribe's rights. And I find it particularly interesting because that demonstrates how you cannot really separate environmental rights and environmental issue to social ones. The two things are interconnected and they depend on each other. So that's why I think she's a bit of an atypical one.
That's great. Thank you very much for your answer, and thank you very much for coming into this interview today. I've had a lot of fun learning more about Nemontene Kimo's work and learning about how intricate activism goes beyond just the social campaigns and the creation of awareness, but really to the nitty-gritty of challenging power structures and challenging the government to remain accountable to its duty to its citizens through legal structures. And I think that's really amazing, and that the milestones that Nemontene Kimo has been able to achieve are notable within the country, and hopefully this trend continues. Thank you very much, Matilde and Lucinda, for being here today.
Thank you, Francia. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
And thank you, listeners, for listening to today's episode. This has been the third in a series of six as part of the IE Raya Summer Research Program of 2024. If you like this episode, please make sure to share it on social media. And you can read Lucinda and Matilde's report at rayagroup.org, as well as their article on our website as well. Make sure to stay tuned for the next episode of this series on our social media, such as LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. And we'll see you next time.